Did you get the full attendance, Dr. Karamadi, on the other call?
I did.
Okay. Someone joined, though.
Dr. Fishman, hi.
Hello.
I think with Zoom, it also records those people that attended, whether it's the phone number or the name.
Got it. Jennifer just joined.
All right, well, why don't we go ahead and get started? Thank you, everybody, for joining us this evening. I will turn it over to Melissa first, so you can go over your agenda items, please.
Perfect. Thanks for joining us tonight. I just have a couple things on the agenda. A couple of billing updates from Tisch, 2024 updates. I attached the new CPT code updates for the 99306 and 99308. Basically, the 306 update is minute-wise, it went from 45 to 50 minutes. And the 99308 went from 15 to 20 minutes. I did copy and paste that into the agenda. And we also updated the telemedicine form to reflect that. If you have any questions, reach out to me, reach out to Tish and the billing team after those updates. We also want everybody to update their G-tube documentation. So if you're replacing or inserting G-tubes in the nursing home setting, we need you to beef up your documentation. So I did copy and paste some diagnosis codes that you need to capture and use in your documentation. So they're on the agenda. If you need me to go over those with you, I'm happy to do so. So just reach out if you need any further instruction. Just a quick MIPS recap. We are wrapping up 2023. 2024 is live in Aprima now, so you can begin to use all the 2024 tabs, MIPS tabs in the history section. So you can start that at any time. They're all live and good to go. That's all I have.
Very good. Thank you, Melissa. Are there any questions about any of those things? Right. Real briefly, I just want to mention or remind everybody that if you do have any planned absences, to please notify and get your regional managers involved in the coverage process. You know, if it's one thing that you're making arrangements to cover those rounds on a different day or time with the facility staff, that's, you know, that's one thing. But you know, if there's no intent on covering rounds that week, please make sure that the regional managers are aware of either situation, really. But even more so importantly, for those planned absences where rounds are not going to take place, so that we can make those attempts to have some sort of coverage if possible. Milt, I will turn the floor over to you.
Okay, so we covered this on the other call, and we had a very good call actually before. So, and there are only a few on this, but I wanted to make sure we covered the same information. So, just an FYI first, as sort of as a preamble. In prior years before 2000 and I think it was 19 or 18, the way nursing homes were reimbursed was on a system called the RUG system. And then PDPM was introduced, actually, I think in late 2019, and changed how facilities are reimbursed. That is changing this year to a hybrid between PDPM and something that's tied to different quality measures that nursing homes are being graded on. But part of that has led to nursing homes looking into and requiring, and surveyors also, use of the latest technologies and advances in whatever, but in our case, wound care. And facilities have been making determinations based on that. And recently, we actually ended up even losing a few facilities because we were not, in their opinion, on that leading edge. And the area that, what we were, in a sense, found delinquent or deficient in was actually on the use of biologics, because now, believe it or not, nursing home operators are asking, as we make presentations, do your providers use biologics? And if the answer is not positive, some of them will not move forward. And, you know, recently we had a request from a major operator that, you know, we spent a considerable amount of time with, actually had to fly to the West Coast to meet with. And that was one of the key things from both their chief clinical officer and their chief executive and operating officers, insisting that, you know, among the things that they're going to require us to do going forward is, are your providers actually using biologics? So this is not a paid commercial. This is reality now. So with that in mind, we've got to make sure that when appropriate, which is not in every case, it's not every patient, it's not every situation, that we do comply and, you know, see when we can. It's not always going to be appropriate. It's not always going to be necessary. But when the opportunity is there, we should, you know, be mindful of that and make sure we consider it as at least an option to follow through on. So that's my little preamble. I'll say a little more after the clinical people now weigh in on this.
All right. Thank you, Milt. Well, everybody certainly heard me speak about biologics as well. Over the last number of months, we wanted to kind of share some of our other colleagues' experiences and successes, and basically, you know, share those stories with you. So I am happy to introduce Dr. Carl. He's one of our physicians in the New Jersey territory. He's going to be talking a little bit about his experiences and some of the patients that he's been using biologics on. So, Dr. Carl, thank you for joining us this evening, and I will turn the floor over to you.
Sure. First, I want to make sure, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess I have kind of three cases I looked through of my patients I've used biologics on. Two of them with like impacts biologics. One of them's one of my patients in the Restorix clinic, and we've been using a different brand, the AmnioExcel graft, which is, I think, just what they have on formulary at the hospital. So one, I guess I can kind of go to the three cases are all a little different. The first one's like an impacts one. I think she's a late 80s female on one of the memory care units at one of my facilities. She's got a history of MS, which has pretty like notable contractures at like flexion contractures at basically every joint of her lower extremities. So she's had this it's a stage 3 ulcer over, it's on the lateral aspect of her foot, just kind of the way her foot lies. But also because of that, it's always like very, the wound would produce a little bit of moisture, but the whole area was just always like a battle with moisture balance between the positioning of like the actual wound in her foot and the fact that that foot was always kind of laying under her. No matter what, how you try to like reposition with PT, it just always ends up in a place where offloading is very difficult. So, and the wound itself is pretty small. It's only like a, it was about 2 by 2. So we used, or I used 5 or 6, I believe, applications of the impact graft. Over the first like 2 weeks was not getting a ton of change in the wound size, but the moisture balance seemed to be getting better. And then I want to say around like 3rd week into the fourth or 4th week into the fifth, all of a sudden the wound started, like the moisture balance had been getting better the first few weeks, and then all of a sudden the wound epithelialized in a matter of like about 1 week. It was halfway there because I went back with a with another biologic the following week, which ended up having to be almost folded over in half. And then the following week I actually just sent back the last graft because it was I mean, I didn't heal out the wound yet on the fifth application or after the fifth application, but was fully epithelialized with nowhere to lay down. So with that one small wound pressure ulcer where you know, without a lot of other complicating factors like incontinence or anything to have to deal with, it worked quite well. And then had another patient at a different facility with a venous ulcer, which was quite a bit larger, where I've also been using, actually requires 2 grafts, or like a 4 by 6 and a 4 by 8. And that one I've done 7 of them, or I believe it was just the sixth or seventh one. And that one has been, I thought it was behaving similarly to the first one, where it was kind of moisture balance was improving, but the size wasn't really budging much. And then the last couple or last week, I came back and the moisture balance has just been a real difficult with that one. It's still draining just a ton. So I did put a bunch an alginate on there, or I guess a couple alginates this week. I have yet to see the follow up with using some of those hyperabsorbent dressings, but I guess that one been a little less successful thus far, but where with the same thing where kind of on that fourth, fifth application I did is where things started to turn a corner a little bit. The last week after that was where moisture balance has been really difficult with this particular wound. So kind of at a standstill where I may give that a week to see if the moisture can improve a bit before resuming the applications. I guess if anybody has any thoughts or questions, feel free to interrupt. Because the other one I had was from my clinic, which is a is actually a pretty sizely stage 3 sacral wound, a patient who had been in and out of the hospital for upwards of like the better part, I guess, most of 2023 or the early part of 2023. And with this one, I'm like kind of looking through our dates from the clinic where she started coming in mid-September. We had done several weeks of like wound vac therapy for that one prior to starting applications for her in November. And I guess her wound is kind of like triangle shaped, and she has advantages with I guess the non local treatments in terms of like she's also not having to deal with incontinence or and she's a little more independent than a lot of my home patients. But her wound kind of encompasses the sacrum and a little bit of both buttocks, and it also it originally incorporated like the entirety of her I guess anus. And I guess with her, the only helpful thing is she's currently post, she has a diverting ileostomy at the moment, which has been helpful in terms of not having to worry about obviously the soiling the area too much. But in her case, we've actually, I only see her every other week and alternate with one of the other doctors in the clinic. So he and I have been managing slightly different, but she had been getting, she got two or three, or sorry, she got three AmnioExcel applications throughout November and early December. Developed some hypergranulation tissue. We actually like paused or held the biologic for a week, which ended up in size improving of the wound a tiny bit at that point. And then she's kind of had where we've been just judging her week to week and has had, I believe, eight applications, but over the course, a little slower period over the course of like 2.5 or 3 months, where depending on whether she's developed some hypergranulation tissue or whether the wound's kind of stalled, we've held off for a week. And that one's actually done quite well. It's started off like a triangle shape and is now down to like a single little strip of open granulation, but the rest of the wound's really epithelialized pretty nicely. Those are kind of the three I'd brought up to talk about. Was there anything, I guess, specific to my experience with any of the handling, or I don't know if there were questions or anything else you guys wanted me to touch on?
So, Dr. Kroll, I'll make, some comments here. Is that, you brought up the level of exudate and having to use alginate and things like that to, control the moisture content. Do want to kind of, emphasize that it is okay to change the secondary dressings. Typically what I do is that, I place the graft down. I have, an oil emulsion or aseptic dressing. I tape that part down with pieces of tape, and I typically write "do not remove." And I think this is the part where, educating the staff, educating the patient, and having some degree of trust. If you can't really trust, that treatment staff, to let them know that, you know what, if the dressing gets saturated, if you see, drainage kind of seeping through, that it would be more beneficial and probably better outcomes if you could change that secondary dressing. There are some places where, I tell that to the treatment nurse, and she basically says that, she'll take care of it, during the week, so that if it needs changing, she's aware, she knows what to do, what not to do. So I think, that is important to communicate with the staff. Because I think that optimizes your overall outcome. I personally have, used this on a number of patients. I really only recall one patient where I didn't have as good of an outcome, and I halted the applications of it. But I think, overall, I think, these products can help the right patients. You got to have that good patient selection. Some of the things that we talked about and reviewed in the previous call is that, number one, a wound itself does not have to necessarily be declining or stalled in the sense of having the same size. Also, remember that, the criteria does include those wounds that have not improved or healed by 50% in that first 4 weeks. So those would technically be considered a stalled wound. That time of onset doesn't necessarily have to coincide with, 30 days from when you saw the patient. If the patient has had the, wound for several months and they just, recently were admitted to this particular facility, as long as it's annotated somewhere in the note that, the patient did come with the prior, wound, and the date precedes the date that's listed on, our wound assessment form, then that's okay to begin the process for biologics. Again, we just want to make sure that, our paperwork is consistent with the facilities, but you can also make comments there that this wound was, prior to admission, for greater than 30 days. Excuse me. The other thing is that, we need to make sure that, medical factors are optimized, whether that's, adequate control of the diabetes, whether that means that there's adequate perfusion in the, in the context of vascular disease. So you do want to make sure that those parameters are optimized. I appreciate you presenting those patient cases. I'll certainly like to hear if there's any questions or comments from, anybody in the audience.
Dr. Karamati, it's Melissa. Can you review the definition again of a stalled wound?
Yeah, so it's going to be either, a decline or lack of improvement in that 30-day span. And as I mentioned, if the wound size hasn't reduced by 50% in that 4-week span, then, that's considered a stalled wound.
So the question on the last call was, or we discussed, our wound form, you can actually mark healing, but it can still be considered a stalled wound based on those parameters and still qualify for biologics. Correct, Dr. Karamati?
Yes.
Okay. Just so that's clear for everybody. The other thing, Dr. Karamati, is can you just review again the difference between a true infection with a biologic and the fibrinous tissue or that differentiate?
Yeah. So, there can be some wounds where you do essentially get this kind of material that builds up that can have the appearance of pus. It's not truly pus. It's really just kind of a reactionary material that tends to accumulate, perhaps because the secondary dressings aren't being changed as frequently as they should, and there's perhaps not enough absorptive material to kind of draw that away. So, if you take a dressing off and you see kind of that buildup of that yellowish greenish fluid, what I tend to do is first see if it has any odor to it, because it shouldn't. But then, I generally give the wound a cleaning through, and you'll see the underlying tissue is typically very healthy appearing, good granulation bed, really no other signs of infection. That's probably what that's going to be, not a signs for any infection. And if there's ever any question or concern that you may be dealing with fibrinous, that fibrinous exudate versus, infection, you can certainly, take a picture of the wound if you'd like, and share it with Melissa or myself, and we'd be happy to share our thoughts on it. Any other questions or comments about the cases or anything about the process, whether it's the IVR, the application, the results?
I guess I'll open or question on the one that the venous one that I was talking about that I've had some difficulty with managing the exudate. And I guess I'm kind of looking back on the sacral pressure ulcer I was talking about, where, again, being managed by multiple providers with this. So there's some just a little bit difference in, thought process with how we manage week to week. But is there anything where we really were taking kind of like a break for a week or two in this 2-3 month process of applying these? And this patient's results been pretty ideal. Are there treatments on those, like if you're running into a problem like what I'm currently running into, where you maybe do take a break from applying for a week or two, where you have a treatment that's done well? I think we were mostly using collagen, which makes some sense in terms of like laying down a scaffolding for this, but I'm curious if anybody had any thoughts.
I don't see, I haven't really come across any reasons why you couldn't spread out those applications. Certainly there's been times where I've seen, patients and I've done, applications that were disrupted for a number of reasons, whether it was, they were hospitalized or they were out on an appointment or, something came up where, they may have missed an application. I don't think it's necessarily detrimental to the healing. Sometimes that actually may be more advantageous, especially if you have a really large wound, because then you can kind of, you can spread out those applications over a, a longer period of time, so you're still getting benefit. I have also noticed that, the speed of healing does tend to speed up. And I don't know if anybody else has had this experience or not, but I've had a couple of patients where I've gone through, all 10 applications. They didn't heal, but then maybe 3 or 4 weeks after that last application, like all of a sudden some things just kind of go at a really accelerated pace, and I start to see significant improvement in that wound healing. So I don't think, if you spread it out, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think, a lot of those growth factors and things like that do still continue to have some degree of effect in the wound healing, despite not having that graft on, on a consistent weekly basis.
I guess I was pleasantly surprised looking back at like the photos that the clinic's charting kind of stores for us, that was really the case for that it was continuing to improve even like a 3 week period where it had been held off during one of the months. Anecdotal, obviously, with that case, but.
I will share that I had one patient who was morbidly obese. He was around 500 pounds plus. He had near circumferential venous wounds on both legs, from about the knee to the ankle. And this was a patient that I had actually used some of the organogenesis products on. And we, because our time with organogenesis was kind of truncated, we never even really got to 10 applications. I think by six or seven, we were seeing significant improvement, and then we stopped our relationship with them. But he basically ultimately healed both of those, all the wounds on both legs. We did see a continued improvement despite the, weekly applications. And, for something that had, gotten to the point where, we thought that he may end up losing, his legs because his wounds were actually rapidly declining. We got things to turn around rapidly and significantly where we basically got him to closure. Any other questions or comments?
Why don't you address also if something happens to the dressing? Like if it's, comes off or what, that kind of thing.
I mean, unfortunately, that's. There's a number of factors that could, lead that to become a situation. It has happened to me, especially on when I've applied the biologics kind of in the sacrococcygeal area. Invariably, you may end up with an aide or somebody that, has to go in and change a patient brief, and they may not realize that, and they end up taking everything. Again, I think this is where patient education, staff education is something that needs to be part of the application. Hopefully, if it can happen kind of after the third or fourth day mark, most of that graft is probably absorbed and is probably, beginning to incorporate into the wound. If it does happen prematurely, prior to that time point, and if you're notified about it, you can certainly put a temporary dressing or perhaps, revert to a collagen dressing, and then, reassess whether or not, what sort of education you may need to provide that staff and, in particular the treatment nurse, to ensure that that doesn't happen again. I've had that happen. Usually what we found to be better is for that treatment nurse to really just be more diligent in educating as many staff members, about what needs to be done and what shouldn't be done with those dressings.
But basically, you can then pick up again the following week, right?
Correct.
Are you going to eat soup or what we're eating?
All right. Anybody else with questions or comments?
That's a few minutes.
Peanuts? Your belly must be nice.
It's much better.
All right. Well, as always, the team is more than happy to help with any questions.
Gotcha.
Feel free to reach out to myself or the education team. We're here to help. If we can help, with patient selection, application, potential complications, whatever it may be, know that we're here as a resource. I want to thank everybody again tonight. Thank you, Dr. Carl, for sharing your experiences, and we'll see everybody next month.
Thank you.
Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.